Hi, Blue Wire listeners. I'm Greg Olson. I'm excited to partner with Blue Wire to bring you TE1, a podcast where I interview the tight ends who have revolutionized the position. Listen in as I have raw, in-depth conversations with the all-time greats like Shannon Sharp, Tony Gonzalez, Travis Kelce, and George Kittle. We'll explore how the tight end position has changed over the last 60 years and what it takes to be the very best. Subscribe to TE1 from Blue Wire Studios today so you're ready for the August premiere.
Welcome to the Heat Beat Podcast. I'm your host, Giancarlo Navas, and with me today
is producer and co-founder, Mr. Brian Goins.
Let's go, Heat. Also joining us today is trash tweeter Jack Alfonso.
Hey.
Took a little long to say hi. You've been on two shows in the last month. Look at you.
Here I go. Don't call it a comeback.
You're called a comeback.
Your rise to fame. Also coming back to the program.
I'll disappear for a year again.
Yeah, you'll disappear, then you'll come back. You're in and out. Heat beat OG. Also joining us today, welcome back to the program, our own 2K coach, Frankie.
What's good, guys?
Listen, that's Nikias' fault that you are the 2K coach, but Nikias, or Alex flexing Nikias' 2K knowledge when you're an actual coach. So this is going to stick with you.
I'll take it.
This is you, Matt. So Miami comes out. Their first game of the season, right? Basketball, regular season basketball is in full swing. The seeding games are back, and the Heat completely dismantle the Denver Nuggets, particularly in the second half. I want to start in kind of a weird place, and maybe it's not so weird if you know kind of the show. Kelly Olynyk getting the minutes over Myers Leonard, right? So the starting lineup changed. No Myers Leonard, right? So it became the same guys, so Kendrick Nunn, Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo, Duncan Robinson, and Jay Crowder. And the Heat go small. They go Jay at power forward, no Myers. Even though the Myers lineup was incredibly successful for them all season, they were plus double digits in a lot of minutes. It's actually like one of the best starting lineups statistically in the NBA. And Spoelstra kind of went away from that. And I know that people give Spo a lot of flack for being really stubborn with the way he does stuff, but I thought that was a really ballsy move by him. And I kind of think that that's the way they're going to want to play, because when the rubber meets the road, you're going to want Bam at center. That Jay Crowder lineup is really good. So those starters are plus 15 net rating and a defensive rating of 96, which the defense, as you know, has been the issue. So I'm kind of curious as to how you guys feel about that starting lineup change and about Myers kind of leaving the rotation today.
I loved it. I loved it because I feel like they played their best defense as a smaller unit. And I felt like you saw more Bam protecting the paint and Jimmy able to do more on the wings and definitely around some of the guards than you normally would. My only thing was that we were already talking like the next game against Toronto, what would we see against Toronto if we would bring back Myers to start off on Marcus Gasol or not. And that's going to be interesting to see how Spo maybe switches, because he's going to have three games in four nights, so he might want to use more bodies to kind of have some fresher legs out there. So I'm kind of curious what if he would switch up the starting lineup, even though they played really great today. Maybe it might be a matchup dependent kind of thing.
Yeah, I definitely see Spo trying that out, trying out the same lineup again. You know, he's a creature of habit, so he likes to run his lineups over and over again and try to see out. You see that he really wanted this lineup because he started off. He didn't wait one or two games to whip it out. He started from the get. So I liked a lot of what I saw, especially once the shots started falling. You saw they got the rhythm down in the third and fourth quarter, and they blew him out. My thing with it is they still have problems containing on pick and roll. You saw Jay crashing and trapping a little more from coming out the floor, but you know, the Nuggets were down three starters. They were down, they're both both of their guards and their small forward who can all create and dribble penetration. And they didn't really, they don't really run a lot of pick and roll. They did a lot of stuff from the pinch post, from the elbows, run stuff through their bigs. A lot of similar stuff to like what the Heat like to do. So it remains to be seen. Definitely when they play Toronto and have to deal with Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry, it'll be a real good test for them. But I liked what I saw.
So actually, that was something I was saying about during the game, not necessarily the way that they run offense, but kind of who they run offense through. So like most of their stuff is through the centers and the wings, right? So Miami kind of has defenders for wings because Jimmy, you know, the guys that they throw on guards are not the guys to throw on wings, even though they can do both. So like it was a lot of Jimmy on the wings. It was a lot of Bam kind of helping out on those wings as well. And that's kind of where Miami's defense is. Sure, I don't think we're worried about how they defend wings. They do a really good job against the Bucks, who are wing heavy. And even the Raptors, I mean, they do a really good job of shutting Siakam down and really limiting what he can do. And I think those teams that have bigger kind of scoring wings, Miami doesn't have an issue with that. It's the guards. It's speedy guards. It's Jamal Murray. It's Trae Young. It's guys like that that just kill the Kemba Walker, right? Those are the guys that I'm really scared of from Miami.
Yeah, they have a lot of people, or they have several people who can guard point guards. Like Bam can guard point guards. We've seen that. Butler can guard point guards. We've seen that. But like, they don't really have a designated person to go to guard the opposing team's point guard, if that makes sense. They don't have great point guard defense. Nunn is not an incredible defender. Duncan's not an incredible defender. Neither is Hero at this point in his career. Yeah, I just mean they're smaller guys who are not like Butler or, I mean, Bam's one of their bigger guys. But like, aside from those two who would have to play out of position to guard the opposing point guard, they really don't have anybody to like stick on.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's say like a Westbrook, or not even a Westbrook, because you would have somebody who's more stronger, secondary. Bigger, yeah.
They don't have like a primary ball stopper. It's like Bam and Jimmy can definitely get it like on a switch or a possession thing, but they're not going to start off possession on Kemba or anything like that. And if they do, they're going to run them through a bunch of screens to try to get them off them and attack mismatches. So it's something that they're not going to have an answer for now. And DJJ was one of the guys they used often, but he was almost out of the rotation.
He played like 9 minutes today.
It was
like nothing. I think it was under 10 minutes for the game.
And his shooting is a real issue. They're completely sagging off of him. They're not even respecting him a little bit.
I love their offense. Like, I love their process. I love what they do. I know I watched the national broadcast today. I kind of wanted to see what they were saying. And like Jeff and Mike Breen and Jackson were really, really high on what they were doing with the dribble handoff stuff. I mean, that's stuff we've known. I saw Zach Lowe and Mo Dakeel tweeting about it too. And it's kind of nice when the Heat get these national spots, especially now that they were the only game on, right? It's a Saturday morning. They're the only game on. It feels really good. And there's a lot of attention on them. And people are really seeing, okay, I really like the creative way they run sets. They run sets from their bigs. They run all this dribble handoff stuff. And then if not, you get Jimmy high screen and roll with all these shooters. And even though, did Jimmy attempt a three today? I don't even think he did.
No, he didn't.
No.
Nope. Jimmy did not.
I don't know if he took any shots outside of like 5 feet. I'd be interested in seeing that.
At all.
Yeah, Jimmy was 6 for 11, 10 for 11 at the free throw line, 22 points, 0 3-point attempts.
Everybody on the team played over 20 minutes except for Iguodala and Derek Jones. Iggy at 14 and Derek at 12. So
and Derek got most of his minutes in the fourth, I'd feel like, in garbage time. But that was one thing I wanted to point out, that, you know, the shots weren't falling in the first half, and you see that Denver stuck around, but like Miami lived at the line. Jimmy, I think it was Bam and Goran were like all over the line. What they shoot in the first half? Like they were like 16 or 17 from the first half at the line. That's how they got all their offense. And then when their shots started falling, they blew them out. So it's nice because last year they would have been down 20. The shots weren't falling, but now they have, you know, that's what it is to have a legitimate star who can get you points, get you, you know, hold you and tread above water until the role players can get it going.
So Jimmy, 10 of 11 from the line, Bam, 8 of 10, Goran, 9 of 10. Goran getting 10 free throws is just enormous.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say it helps to have like a specifically a star like Butler, who is uniquely good even among stars. Like, I've never seen a guy just work that hard to get his points, like just sacrificing his body to get to the line. And it was ugly a lot of the time, but like undeniably kept them in the game when it was close. And it's, I said it to, I think, Yuji, he's one of the hardest guys I've ever seen playing in my life. And watching him, I'm out of breath. Like, I'm exhausted for him. Yeah. it's exhausting to watch him. It's not even always pretty, but like, you're glad he's on your team because he's just muscling, like out muscling players to get
Jimmy
points.
Jimmy plays like he's not going to play again. Like he's on a G League contract, like on a 10-day. He's a max player playing like he's on a 10-day contract. Like, he has to earn it every second.
Brad, we got somebody in the waiting room.
Ooh.
What up, Nikias?
Oh, hey.
Nikias was knocking at the door. Brian wasn't letting him in.
I didn't even know he was coming on.
I was heading from outside.
He's
the
real
club.
2K coach.
We let you in. The velvet rope. We got the 2K coach here. Got Trash Tweeter. Now we have our statistician and pun master.
99 Nikias overall. My player, 2K.
Hello, hello.
We're kind of talking about how Derek really got the short end of the minute stick.
Oh, I came in at the right time. Wow. Okay.
Oh, there we go. Frankie's talking about like teams are just really sagging off of him, and like Miami's really, really finding their offense, even if Butler doesn't. I mean, we don't even think Butler took a shot outside of the paint today. And they were able to really, really get going offensively.
Oh, man. So the Derek thing is frustrating, kind of two-pronged. One, as you alluded to, Denver just kind of didn't guard him. And he took, what, 1-3 today and missed it?
Yeah.
It was just kind of rough. Also, this seemed to be the matchup for him against a good team if he was going to see it, just because of how aggressively Denver normally guards pick and rolls in general. So that opens up those slips for him to be a role man there. So if he was going to have some value offensively, it would be kind of him slipping those hard hedges and stuff. And he didn't get any opportunities there either. So if he can't shoot and he can't be a lob threat for you, there's really no reason to play him because he's not going to have value on the offensive end at all. So I think this was kind of instructive of what we may see in the playoff setting with Derrick Jones Jr. It's just, I don't see how he helps the offense at all.
I've been kind of concerned because I've been scared that Spoelstra's going to kind of overcorrect for some of the defensive stuff by adding a guy like Derek or even Iguodala to an extent if they don't have it going offensively, where they're just absolutely forced to play a guy like that who may have nothing on the other end, and it's going to kill their offense. I mean, like, today, I loved what I saw offensively, and I know that Denver was missing some guys, but all the stuff out of dribble handoffs, the way that Jimmy and Goran were just getting to the line, the shots. I mean, Duncan's an absolute monster. The passes he was making, the reads he's making, that's just growth that I didn't know he'd make this season. Like, it was just incredible to watch.
I was gonna say that's the biggest difference between for me between Duncan and Wayne is that Wayne is gonna outcut all the time on the down screens and the pin downs. He's gonna look for the three. Duncan is gonna look for the catch, look for the slips, gonna cut, gonna curl. He's got a little bit more variety to it, making the correct reads. And you know, I think Duncan's a better shooter, and his height makes a big difference in his shooting as well, because he's 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", whatever he is. And Wayne is like 6'4" on a good day.
Y'all see that play where Duncan drew the second defender off the DHO. Bam does a little slip. Duncan hits him. Bam does a short roll. Gets Jay wide open in the corner.
Dude, twice
Jay's
I saw.
Jay's man kind of rotates to help off the Bam roll. Hits. I mean, like, that's when I think of what they can do offensively, like, that's the peak of it, right? So, like, if you give Duncan one-on-one coverage, you know he's going to pull up and shoot, and he's been absolutely incredible this year. You don't want to give Bam free throws or a clear lane to the basket, and you know he's a capable passer off the short roll, which he's really added to his game this year. And that's like, I mean, all that without their, you know, quote-unquote best player, their star max guy, Jimmy Butler.
Jack, what's so funny?
Because you said he's been an incredible shooter, but you didn't want to concede that he's a good shooter, so you said this year, because you don't want to admit that you're wrong about Jay Crowder.
Duncan? Oh, Jay? Oh, man, let me tell you something. I've had to eat so much crow on the Jay Crowder stuff. Before he got traded to the Heat, he was shooting 29% from three on six attempts. Now he's shooting 39% on 7 attempts. So it's only like, it's not like the volume has changed dramatically. The shots, I remember checking before, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I remember checking when the trade happened. Most of his shots were like open looks. He wasn't like, you know, throwing up shots with a hand in his face. I mean, via NBA.com/stats, they were mostly classified as open shots. So it's not like the quality was bad. I don't know what, guys, what the hell happened? I don't know what happened to him.
Culture.
He's being Jay Crowder. This is what he does. He shoots 45% from 3 for 2 weeks, and then he shoots 28% from 3 for a month. This has been an extended hot streak for him. We'll see what the pandemic means.
This can't be a hot streak now. I mean, we're literally 4 months removed from the last regular season game.
That's true.
Do you remember when Joe Johnson shot like 60% from 3 for like 3 months and then like went completely cold in the playoffs?
God, I'm terrified. This is totally what's going to happen. He's going to go cold for the whole round. This is
Jay Rich too. It's both of them.
Yep. That cost them an Eastern Conference Finals appearance.
But the nice thing about this team, as opposed to, I mean, that team and other teams the Heat have had, where it's like, if Wayne Ellington is off, you don't really have shooting. If Jay Crowder's off, like, I don't know, maybe Tyler Hero's like playing better than he's been playing. Like, they've had shooters go cold during like this game even. Like, I don't know. I don't think anybody played particularly bad, but it's not like they've been playing at like max capacity in terms of shooting. Like, I think Hero's looked pretty bad in terms of accuracy since the, I don't know, I haven't tracked the numbers on that, but for a while now. But it's like, if that guy can get hot, it's fine if Crowder goes cold for like a little bit. Like, I think they have enough depth, like with Myers and Kelly and stuff, where as opposed to past years, they can kind of handle a cold streak from one of their main shooters. Maybe not from Duncan.
I think the counter there is that Jay becomes more important because he is one of two, maybe three and D wings that the Heat have, at least in theory. So if Jay Crowder isn't hitting threes, it really gets tough because even if Iguodala is, teams don't guard him as a shooter. If Jared Jones Jr. is hitting threes, teams don't guard him as a shooter. Jay Crowder is the one wing on the roster that can credibly defend the multiple positions and is also treated like a guy that can knock down an open shot. So the Heat can't really afford for him to go cold in the playoffs anymore because their options just become incredibly thin after that.
And we kind of go back to where they were before the trade, where when Justice wasn't playing, I mean, their defense has maybe marginally improved, but like they were just an absolute disaster and they didn't have any answer for speedier players. Nikias, I was kind of throwing this idea around before you came on, but I think that part of the reason why they look to have some defensive success against Denver is because Denver right now doesn't really have fast, speedy guards that can bother them, right? So they did both their damage through the centers and the wings. Which I kind of feel like Miami has the bodies for that. I feel like those bigger wings, Miami has kind of proven this season that they can defend guys like that, not necessarily kind of smaller Trae Young, John Morant types.
Yeah, I think that's true. That's why I don't think it's good that they beat a good team. And even with the guys that Denver were missing, they're still a solid team. So it's good for them to get one of those gimme games considering the rest of their schedule. But that's also true. I don't think the point of attack issues were really solved. In fact, there was, I mean, quick example I could think of from the first quarter. Miami had a possession where they defended extremely well for like 21 seconds. The ball swings around to Monte Morris with Jay Crowder matched up on him. And Monte Morris just blows right by him, gets a layup at the end of the clock. And it's just like, well, it kind of doesn't matter who the point guard is at this point because they can get to the lane whenever. So I do think Miami still has some questions to answer on that front. But, you know, overall, it was still a good defensive showing for them. And I do agree with you that they do have wings to throw on guys. It's just going to be figuring out how to contain speedy guards because that's going to compromise the rest of their defense if they don't figure that out.
And like watching the Clippers, I can't watch Pat Bev and not think that that would have been so helpful for them this season.
Yeah.
Like,
would be nice.
That completely game changes their whole team. Just having that body kind of starting a point guard. Maybe even, I know that Nunn gives them a lot, who was, by the way, very, very good. And I think his patience, not even in pick and roll, but even when he's in isolation or when he gets guys switched off of him is like, I don't think we talk about that enough. I mean, that dude, I've been really critical of that guy. But his patience for a rookie, I know he's an older rookie, but it's really, really impressive to see what he's doing. And like that switch that he got on Jokic, leveraged his ability to shoot, had Jokic rocking, got a shot at the rim. He's been really good. I'm like really, really happy for that.
And on that play, I was so happy he attacked because he likes to settle a lot for those for threes against bigs on the switch. I don't know if he just doesn't think he can get by or he just wants to shoot the three. But the Heat need some easy buckets because a lot of their offense is so catered to going outside in, running plays for their shooters that they need to be aggressive sometimes. And Nunn is one of the few guys who can take somebody off the dribble. So that kind of like set the tone for me.
Duncan Robinson was plus 28, guys.
And if I felt it. I felt all plus 28 of that.
So good. Some of those shots he makes are like, obviously he's incredibly limited in other areas, but some of the shots he makes, like dribbling to the right, like pump faking, and then like basically
the one before the end of the first half was beautiful.
Incredible. That like that's like a not Klay a Thompson shot. That, shot.
Yeah. It looked exactly like Klay Thompson.
His balance is elite.
Yeah, that's the difference between him and like Wayne Ellington, like you said, Frankie. Like I think Wayne Ellington did one thing as good as I've ever seen it done, like in one really important thing, which is like running off screens, catching, and like just spotting up shooting, like getting balanced in shooting. But Duncan has such a like wide repertoire just within the world of shooting that like I don't know. And as G mentioned, like his passing isn't bad either. Like he's doing things that I didn't expect him to ever be able to do. And it's really like made me kind of question where he's going, because I mean, he is incredibly limited. Yeah, exactly. Max player. Like I don't, you know, I'm not saying he's a future star, but I am saying like, it does seem that he is a little more than just one of the best shooters in the league, which is nice because, you know,
I think we forget he's not technically a rookie because he played last year, but he's old too. He's like 24. He's like 23, 24, 25, something like that. But he's got a lot of experience and you can tell he's a craftsman. He works on it. He works on his balance on all his shots. Like you said, coming out like one dribble pull up for coming off a catch pump. He loves that pump fake to let the defender go by him, take a dribble and shoot that. It's beautiful to watch him shoot. It's crazy.
He turned 26 in April.
Yeah, I was off.
Can we talk about...
His middle name is McBride.
What? Oh, really? Duncan McBride.
Duncan McBride Robinson.
That is the whitest name I've heard.
It's... Can we talk about Duncan last season? Couldn't get on the court for a lottery team. The Heat were a lottery team. Couldn't get on the court.
That's because of Dwayne Wade, man.
He's 6'6 or 6'9 or something. Like he's a big guy. It's not Dwayne Wade's position.
Yeah, but you're not going to play him like power forward minutes.
I mean, he plays a lot of small forward. I mean, he's with him and Jimmy on the court. I mean, he's a bigger guy. I mean, regardless, I mean, he couldn't get on the court last year for a lottery team that was not very good. And on a team that's fighting for a 3/2 seed, he's their third best player. And just that leap, I mean, clearly he wasn't this last season, right? Like, there was a lot of work put in the offseason. He bulked up. He really worked on this, right? Like they clearly believed in him.
Did he play in Summer League? I can't remember if he played Summer League this year or not. Or last year.
I don't remember either.
I don't remember. Alex would be the one last year.
He played Summer League.
Because I don't remember. Yeah, I remember he was great the first year, but I felt like the second year.
Oh, that's right. He did play Summer League, and that guy really wanted to set him up with his daughter.
That's right. The creepy guy. Yeah,
never mind. I should have never questioned.
Yeah. I forgot about that. How it was we forget the classic?
We know why.
Oh God, that's so funny.
It was that lob from Wade in his last game that gave Duncan the confidence he needed to like, hey, I belong.
Passing the torch.
Exactly.
Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball is finally kicking off this week, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro athletes Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and seven-time NBA champion Robert Horry. See what they had to say and what it'll be like playing about fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. Have you ever heard of DealDash.com? It's the best, most honest bidding site where you can win things you'd never expect at a price you'd never believe. They have over 1,000 auctions every day on electronics, appliances, beauty products, home decor, and even cars. And here's how it works. It's like an auction, but every time an item starts at $0 and only goes up 1 cent every time you bid. The kicker is that the auction clock restarts after just 10 seconds. That means every time you bid, everyone else has 10 seconds to answer the item or it's yours. If you go ahead and buy now, DealDash is offering our listeners an extra 100 free bids upon sign up on top of their other discounts. Go to DealDash.com and use the offer code HeatBeat20 or DealDash.fm/HeatBeat20. That's DealDash.fm/HeatBeat20.
Did you guys see that stat that ESPN was floating around today that the last time a Heat player had a 20-point fourth quarter was Dwayne Wade in 2009?
Kelly Olynyk!
Duncan Robinson may be the best shooter in the world. Might not even be the best shooter on this team.
LeBron never did it. That's crazy.
How about that?
Kelly was doing more than just shooting. Like, he had some nice little, like, he's taking it off the dribble, like, the fakes, the little hooks, like,
the pretty game.
Yeah.
I love Kelly. Listen, I love Kelly. And Myers looks to be out of the rotation until they play bigger teams, I imagine. Let's see what they do against Toronto. But I've been a big Kelly fan. I've believed in him. I know that the numbers didn't look favorable for him in the beginning of the year. All the lineup data would suggest Myers. And I think Myers can help in certain situations, but I just think what we saw today is Kelly's high end and Myers just can't get there. Mm-hmm. Like Myers just doesn't have that passing game, doesn't have that DHO game, doesn't have the ability to drive to the basket from the 3-point line because teams are so scared of your shot. He just doesn't have that. And even defensively, I thought he was really solid today. I thought he did a really, really good job.
Yeah, Kelly, and Kelly's got a way quicker release. So the closeout, the spacing matters a lot more for him. Like Myers is a great shooter, but Kelly's got such a quick trigger. You saw on his first couple of threes in the fourth, Millsap was like 2-3 feet away when he caught it, and it was still too much space. Myers would not have gotten those shots up.
I cannot think of a better way for them to have started this restart. And after that game against Memphis, where we were all questioning, Twitter was doom and gloom, and it was over. We were bitching about the defense. Memphis won a championship. They raised a banner for beating the Heat at a scrimmage, and it was all over. And then they come out and they wax a good team. They absolutely torch.
And Memphis ended up losing in overtime.
They had 26 points. In the fourth quarter, Kelly had 20. It was great.
Yeah.
I love it. So we've mentioned Myers a couple times. I'd be remiss if we don't talk about the elephant in the room with Myers. So Myers didn't kneel down with the other players during the anthem. He did wear a Black Lives Matter shirt, unlike Jonathan Isaac. And there's been a lot of takes flying around Twitter, right? About, you don't have to kneel, or you do have to kneel, whatever. I know Myers, the reason he gave the AP was because of his brother in the military, correct, Brian?
I mean, that's the story that I saw from Tim Reynolds, but I didn't see a quote necessarily from him. It just seemed like what Tim Reynolds, I guess, reported just from being at the game, because he's the only, from my understanding, he's the only reporter covering the Heat as a local beat reporter right now.
Barry's not there?
I don't think so.
Barry's always there. Wow.
Barry's got too much stuff worrying about the Marlins right now.
Barry is a beacon of news in this city. I thought it was kind of interesting that Tim got the story. So, like, it felt to me that he kind of took that Myers had to talk to him before. You know, like, I think Myers kind of saw this as a problem and spoke to Reynolds before, kind of give the story, which I thought was interesting. That I think he, that kind of leads me to believe that he talked to his teammates about it. I mean, Udonis and Jimmy were kind of holding on to his legs, and he put his arm on Jimmy's shoulder.
Yeah,
as they were doing it.
Here's a quote from Spo after the post game presser, and he said to, I don't know if he said it to Alex or if he asked him, but I'm reading it from Alex's Twitter account. He said he's fully behind this movement, just like everyone else in the organization and this association. This is not a political discussion or an either or discussion.
I mean, we know Myers to be very vocal about these issues for Black and Brown America. I do think, like, the thing I don't understand is people on Twitter getting upset that we're asking the question. I think there's the optics and even just the way it looks. I mean, he's the tallest guy on the damn floor, and we have this tall white man standing as all these Black men are kneeling. And I do think that I think it's valid to ask a question. I don't think we should burn Myers at the stake. I have my issues with the institutions of America, with the institutions of imperialism and the military. Like, I have my opinions and I have my feelings on it. But I think to either character assassinate Myers for standing when clearly it looks like his teammates support him and that he supports the movements, and also, like, the idea of him, the optics of it just don't look good, right? So mm-hmm. I think that's where the crossroads is, but I think it's fair to ask the question.
Yeah, I think it's fair to ask the question, but I mean, it asked and answered, and people are allowed to disagree with it, agree with it. It'd be kind of a bad protest if he was, like, punished for not protesting.
He lost his minutes. DMP, Black yeah. Lives Matter.
We don't know if that's what the reason was, and I'm sure Spo would deny that. But I thought what was more ridiculous than, I mean, I guess the individual choice of Myers, that it, as you said, he seemed to discuss with the team. I don't know the, like, details of those dynamics, but you know, it was his choice, and I thought what was more surprising to me, or a little more odd to me, was the Jimmy Butler situation, where he gave, I thought, like, this really beautiful, like, you know, well thought out reasoning for, like, not wanting any name on the back of his jersey. And it seems like a very simple request. Like, it's saving people work. Just don't put anything on the back of the jersey.
Saving
even
materials.
Had the jersey on. And they said,
which, by the way,
no, so you can't do that.
People that don't know, Jimmy was saying, because, you know, there's a, you know, he's obviously a very famous person, and there are high profile cases like George Floyd. And he doesn't want no name people, no name Black men and women to be forgotten. Right. This happens a lot in this country, and we don't know the names of George Floyd. Right. Or we don't know the names of Trayvon Martin or all the Black women and Black trans women that have died through police brutality. So, like, Jimmy's thinking was, you know, I want no name to kind of represent all the stories that are lost, all the people that don't get the coverage, all the people that don't get these movements. So kind of to fill in Jack's to kind of you continue. Yeah. Jack, I just wanted to fill the audience in who didn't know.
No, thank you for contextualizing that. Cause I think, yeah, it is I thought the way he said it, and you summed it up, like, it is a really great reason, and I thought it was really well thought out and obviously, like, personal. And you saw a lot of other NBA players, when he said that, say, oh, I like that approach. Other players had agreed, you know, oh, I want to do that as well. So, you know, obviously, like, came from the heart. He obviously thought deeply on it, and you know, was wearing the jersey at the beginning of the game and was told not to. So it was one of those weird things where, you know, beyond the individual choice to, like, protest or not protest, which is, you know, everybody's right. It was weird to see, like, you can protest, but, like, they're, like, very weird, maybe arbitrary. Yeah. Yeah. Arbitrary, like, weird lines where you can say this or have this on your jersey, but you can't have this. And
yeah,
specifically with that message, it's not like it's inflammatory or anything.
Exactly. Because it's a lot of the issue that a lot of people have had with the NBA's whole thing about this. It's not, you know, like obviously everybody wants the NBA to support Black Lives Matter. But, you know, like limiting their voices and their freedom of expression is a problem at the same time. You know, letting them put something on their back, but only giving them certain options. And, you know, like Jimmy's thing wasn't an issue. Should not have been an issue. You see college teams do that all the time. They don't have names on the back to represent the team or whatever. But I don't get why that's an issue for the NBA. And I had one of my followers on Twitter was talking about it today. He's like, what, like kneeling for the anthem is not as like it's more powerful when like everybody's against you, like in a sense, because you know, like the whole league is doing it and it's allowed. When like Kaepernick did it, it's nobody wants him. He got blackballed from the league. It's a whole different equation. So like, you know, now that it's popular and as a popular form of protest, everybody can do it. And it's a completely different like form of protest now, just because everybody's doing it.
It takes a lot of the kind of the edge off of it, like when Cap mm-hmm. did it, as to now when it's a very corporate co-opted
exactly
kind of movement, right? So I do think so. Like I thought our Heat Twitter president Alf made a really good point on Twitter where he said y'all rather Gordon Hayward knee. Take a knee than Myers Leonard stand. And kind of what he means by that is Gordon Hayward has been a MAGA donator, right? I think pretty famously the NBA Republican right now. He has a lot of heat for that, justifiably so, by the way. And Myers is not like that, right? Myers has been very outspoken for Black rights. He has put real dollars into it, right? Has helped individuals in the Black community, especially in Miami and all that stuff. Yeah. So I do think that kind of we get really into this performative nature of kneeling or of these like kind of acts of solidarity, right? Which that's what they are. I mean, it is an act of solidarity with your teammates, and I do think it's important. But it could also be very performative, like Gordon Hayward, because Gordon Hayward is literally putting his money, his dollars, that, you know, a lot of assists from those little cuts of his came from Black teammates and Black point guards, and he's putting all that money into kind of the GOP and that, you know, really not great racist institution. Not that there's the DNC isn't, but you kind of get what I mean. It's so that's kind of where we're at. And I did think it was a worthy discussion, especially because I think we know Myers not to be a bad guy, but it was a little bit of an odd decision that I think deserved the questioning.
Yeah. And it's the same thing what happened to Greg Popovich too the other night. So, I mean, we know Greg Popovich would be very outspoken in the league on a bunch of issues, not just Black Lives Matter, but like just gender equality in general. I mean, he's one of the only coaches that has an assistant that's a woman on his team. And just,
we don't question Pop.
Yeah. You don't question Pop. And just like you wouldn't question Steve Kerr either.
Pop is 7 years old. I give him credit for not, for even thinking about taking a knee.
He probably just physically couldn't. I don't question Myers. Like, not once did I see Myers standing and I thought, wow, Myers is like low-key MAGA or something. Like, I don't think that. And I think it's unfair to think that. I do think that Myers had a different experience with America. So he is standing for an America that existed for him and that doesn't exist for Jimmy Butler and Udonis Haslem. That America, yeah. He is standing for an America that just did not exist for those other people.
He did not
exist for his teammates.
Exactly. He's not MAGA Porter Jr. that has stand up on the back of his jersey.
Bro, that was so fucking lame.
He had stand up. I didn't even know that was an option until I saw him wear it.
Is this Jeff Trilly playing a joke?
No, that was really real. I saw that. It said stand up and then the back of his jersey is one.
Kelly took that charge for America. As a Canadian, he took it for America.
At least it didn't say group economics, though.
Oh my God, I was dying to. I forgot what his thing was. I wanted to talk about how bad he was today as well.
Andre?
Yeah, I forgot, but it was group economics. I was like, it's not education reform. What was it? What was his? I think he's the only guy in the league with group economics.
I think Spencer Dinwiddie also has
Bitcoin.
I think Solomon Hill did make a good point on our podcast a couple shows ago where he was kind of talking about the idea of group economics being like in reinvesting in Black communities, right? So like instead of your money, so we kind of use the example of Solomon Hill, you know, making it in the NBA, being rich, living in Coconut Grove, for example, and then his tax dollars and his money goes into the Coconut Grove community, right? So even though he left the projects and like a low income neighborhood, now he's putting his money back into Coral Gables or Coconut Grove, when it should be re-going into the areas that you kind of came into and just kind of how wealth works. So I think that's what they mean by that, from what I understood and talking to Solomon Hill. So I know that Andre's really big in kind of investment and all this stuff in Silicon Valley. It is funny, though.
Yes. It's only funny because the Spencer Dinwiddie stuff where he was just talking Spencer about Bitcoin.
Makes it hilarious.
That's what's funny about it to me. It's not like the actual argument behind Bitcoin, like group economics, but like,
and he's like,
just the association with Andre. That. Like,
I mean, it's also funny being from Andre. Like it's like Andre is like, has that Spencer Dinwiddie kind of energy. So it's,
he does.
He has Spencer Dinwiddie energy. Okay.
He has Spencer Dinwiddie.
Interesting. I don't think anybody's ever been described like that.
I don't know if it's a good or a bad thing, but it's a thing. It's certainly a thing.
I love Dinwiddie.
Dinwiddie likes anime too. I should get Dinwiddie on the show. Dinwiddie wore One Piece sneakers once.
He's actually a really great listen. I heard him on our podcast before. He's a great guest.
He's a smart dude. It's just funny that he tried to like finagle a Bitcoin I don't even know what it is. It's
cryptocurrency,
like,
man.
No, but he's like leveraging his contract as cryptocurrency, wanting an advance on his payments. It's some wacky shit.
He wants to invest his money and I mean,
Spencer Dinwiddie is way smarter than me. I don't understand how this works. It's a lot of complicated financial terms.
He essentially wanted the fans to pay for him to wherever he goes as a free agent, but he did not realize he's Spencer Dinwiddie and not Kyrie Irving or anything like that.
It works if you're Giannis.
Exactly. If Giannis did that, Giannis would get that by some billionaire a fan who's going to just sneak that in there. Like, yeah, I'll take care of him. But no, Spencer Dinwiddie.
It's gonna be tampering.
Did you see who donated the most to him?
No.
It was a Knicks fan who had like his username was like Nick Swallow. Swallow for the Knicks. And he donated like $60.
I respect that. I thought Millsaps was funny because he's number four and his thing was vote, so it's like vote four. And I'm like, vote for who, Millsap? Vote for who? Okay, so let's get to Andre before we end the show, because I know you wanted to kind of get to him. It was a rough outing for the acquisition.
It's the Jay Crowder trade. Let's talk about that.
I would like to call it the Jay Crowder trade from now on. Let's do this.
Because it's been... when he's on the court, his spacing, like he knows where to be. You would think he would know where to be, but it's just so clunky now when he's out there. He like goes to the short corner. He goes to the dunker spot, and then to us, there was a play where somebody drove to the basket, went to kick it to Duncan or Kelly in the corner, and Iguodala just catches it right there. He's like, "Oh, you're behind me. Let me throw it to you." It's like he couldn't guard. He was struggling against bigs. He was struggling. He can't shoot. They don't respect his shooting. Like I don't know what he brings to the table right now.
So I kind of want to circle back to, I kind of want to make a correction on something we just said. So Jimmy Butler just told Mark Stein that he doesn't care about the league's explanation. Butler said he relented for his teammates and described it to be determined if he tries to put on a blank jersey again. So apparently he doesn't really know why. They asked him to change the jersey before tip-off.
The referees did.
Yeah, so Butler had planned to go with the nameless jersey and he didn't know why. And he's like, I don't care. And he's just, he didn't want to create issues for his teammates. That's why he did it. But he's called it to be determined if he tries to play in a blank jersey again. So kind of to circle back to something we said. And Solomon Hill just tweeted out, homie friend of the show, Solomon Hill tweeted out, kneeling is within our constitutional right. It's what our military / fight to protect. Political figures have changed the narrative into quote unquote being disrespectful. The notion to kneel was presented by someone who served in the military. Please do your research. And he's referring to when Colin Kaepernick asked veterans if it would be disrespectful to kneel. And I know that a lot of the conversation now, because Myers Leonard's brothers is in the military, is going to shift to like, well, this isn't about the military, and like people are co-opting it and making it about the military when it's not. So I imagine Solomon Hill is kind of speaking
Solomon
to that.
Solomon Hill's follow-up tweet says, always thankful to those that serve. Thanks, Pops. And he put a picture of his, looks like his father, and a military uniform.
So that's I, by the way, agree with 100%. And that was something Alex Toledo was saying on our group chat today. It's like people are just really moving the conversation to something that it's not, which is what we kind of figured Myers would do with the AP stuff. So just wanted to kind of correct that as we kind of moved on and then back to the Jay Crowder trade, as we're calling it now. We used to call it the Justice trade.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Bossman 99 is just on another level right now. He got the Giancarlo reverse jinx of him being a bad shooter, and now he's shooting 40% from three.
Is that the most wrong I've ever been?
No. Well, you said Carl White was Chris Bosh.
I said Chris Bosh Light. I called him Chris Bosh Light.
That's what's the wrongest White you've doing ever nowadays?
Evan Cohen of ESPN Radio West Palm Beach never came back on the show after that. I said I called him Chris Bosh Light, and Evan Cohen never came back.
That's not true. He was on that Megapod.
I was mad. I was angry.
He was
at
on
that
the
episode.
Megapod with Sedano. He was.
Yeah, but George Sedano had to help get him on. I mean, we had to call the forces from high up to bring Evan back on the show.
That's the first time one of your takes has genuinely made me angry.
I have really bad. I've been known for bad takes, and like I even made. I have an anime Twitter account at Subtitled Anime if you want that kind of content. And on that side of Twitter, they also know me for my horrific takes. And I'll tweet a take, and they always say, like, why the fuck do you say this? Like, how could somebody have such awful takes? And the people that know me from both are like, wow, like, you're just really consistent with this bad take stuff, aren't you? Like, it's
you just have bad takes all around.
It's in my identity. My opinions are bad. I can't listen. I know. I'll call a spade.
At least you're self-aware on, like, Dinwiddie.
That's in the show there. That's
I want to talk about the Heat getting into a three seed right now.
Okay, fine, Brian. How many games are they back?
They're a game and a half back, which I thought they would only be 2 games back, but I guess they gained a full game from winning today, even though they were 2.5 entering the game. I don't know. I don't understand how that makes sense, but I guess they moved up a whole spot because the Celtics lost last night against Milwaukee, and then the Heat obviously won today. Currently, the Heat are a game and a half back.
Are they a game and a half? Yeah.
Yeah. Philly, Indiana played today, so it's battle of the fifth and sixth seed right now. So whoever wins that game will be the fifth seed. So I don't know.
The Heat played
Boston in 3 nights. So potentially they could be tied if the Celtics lose again tomorrow.
They play
Portland tomorrow at 3:30. Cool.
And then Miami gets them on Tuesday on the second night of a back-to-back.
Yep.
Oh, God. I'm not confident at all. Celtics have the Heat's number for the last couple of years.
Kemba is what scares me in that situation. How important do you guys think is it for Miami to get into the three seed? I know that we're confident about that Bucks matchup more than we should be, but I think it's really good to avoid them.
I think it'd be very helpful for them if they could avoid Philly in the first round.
But you'd rather have the 4 seed in a way.
I'd rather have whoever is. I mean, that the cool thing for the Heat is like they play Indiana twice, so they can kind of like. I mean, I don't know if they would actually do it, but if they really wanted to play,
too much culture would
if
never.
They really wanted to play Indiana, they could tank those games.
Never, too much culture. The one time
on
they
purpose,
tried to
never.
The one time they tried to tank a game was in the 2009-2010 season. The last game of the season against the New Jersey Nets went to double overtime. Jacoby Diawara banked in a three. Then they played the Celtics instead of the Hawks. I will never forgive Diawara for that.
That's not the only one because they tried to tank in 14-15 and Zoran Dragic went off.
Oh, that's right!
Everybody had triple doubles. James Ennis.
Beasley.
Was it Beasley? Didn't Beasley ball out that game too?
Henry Walker.
Bill Walker.
He was
legendary. Legendary Twitter night.
That was an incredible game. They played like 6 players.
They ran zone like the whole game.
Well, James they Ennis, have too much culture. They can't tank games even if they try. Watch, they're gonna try to tank one of those Indiana games and just gonna like put Derek for 48 minutes and he's gonna hit every single three. He's gonna become Duncan Robinson.
100%.
Never again.
Bro, but seriously, if they could get the 3 seed, that'd be pretty good for them.
I mean, let's have a hypothetical where they have to play Philly at three and then play the Raptors. I take that because the two matchups I'm most scared of in the East for them are the Bucks and Boston.
Agreed.
And I think if you can avoid both of them until the conference finals, I think that's great. Jack, you're shaking your head.
I'm more worried about, this is an insane take, and I'm going to preface it by saying it's a bad take, and I'm wrong, but I'm more afraid of the Raptors than I am of the Bucks. I think I think Bam is going to big time Giannis if they get in the series together. I think Bam is has mental fortitude. I'm a believer now. I'm a full believer in the culture, but like more than anything, I just believe in that Bam Giannis matchup. Like, and I think the Raptors are really good in a way that like will frustrate the Heat a ton.
I'm scared of like all these upper teams, mostly because I'm scared about. I think the Heat play the Raptors one more time. Brian, am I correct?
They played them on Tuesday or Monday. On Monday.
Yeah. So that's a game that I think is going to be really important for Miami. The Raptors have a really hard schedule.
They're playing the Lakers tonight. That's going to be interesting.
They have a really, really rough schedule, and I don't know if they're going to be able to hold on to the two seed. So that's another thing to also consider. So
they had too big of a lead right now. With these eight games, I don't think they'll fall.
I mean, they have 2.5 up on the Celtics. If they lose to the Lakers and they lose to the Heat, for example, which is just a really, really possible scenario. I mean, those are two really good teams, Lakers especially. Raptors first game, the Lakers already got a game under their belt. So it's not out of the ordinary for that to happen. So, I mean, it's going to be a really, really tight race.
So you're saying the Heat could be a two seed?
I don't think they can catch the two seed, but I do think they could catch the three seed and maybe Boston could get the two seed.
Yo, I'm all in for playing Orlando the first round.
I would love to play Orlando. I don't think Miami can catch. Miami's, what, five games back of Toronto? So I just don't think they'll be able to jump the Celtics and do that. So no, I think in play is the three seed.
Yeah.
Maybe where's Indiana Boston, at right now?
Indiana's the sixth seed. They're tied with Philadelphia.
They're fifth seed.
Orlando's comfortable. Indiana's the Orlando fifth and Brooklyn are separated by half a game. Orlando won.
If he could stay at four and get Indiana, that would be the ideal for me.
That's the thing. I think Indiana's. It doesn't seem like Oladipo's going to play.
Yeah, I mean, but they played really well without him. They played most of the season without him. Sabonis is
also out too.
Oh, that's true. I forgot about that.
So I don't see how they could. I don't see how they're going to be better than Philly three's next eight games.
Small sample size.
Philly sucks.
I love that Philly matchup for them. I'm just not scared of them at all. Like I left Ben off my all NBA ballot. Like I don't know. I just don't. Wait,
did
really
you have
believe
an official
it.
Ballot?
I did not have an official. My fake Twitter ballot.
Did I make it seem like I had a vote?
Yeah, did. You totally worded it like you did. Did you steal Ethan's ballot or something?
I'm on the Levitard show once and I get a vote.
Want a Philly matchup.
He stole Poppy Levitard's ballot.
Yeah,
Jesus.
Totally.
Which, by the way, not to shill, but you know, if you want to check out my appearance on the Dan Levitard show local hour, check that out. It was a Lauer. Thursday local hour. It's with the shipping container.
It's called the Lauer. Get your facts straight.
It's called the Lauer.
You plugged like everything. Your anime stuff, your Lauer appearance.
Listen, I'm in full show mode. By the way, check out my YouTube channel, Subtitled Anime Jesus. On YouTube. My last video on Edelgard and Lelouch. If you played Fire Emblem Three Houses and like Code Geass the anime, you might want to check out the parallels between the Crimson Empress and Lelouch v. Britannia. So check all that. And also the Subtitle Anime podcast. Listen, I'm killing the content. I have a Japan Sinks 2020 podcast coming out. You can check out my
Kaguya-san
Love
what?
Is War episode, Japan Sinks. It's based off a novel.
Everyone stop listening.
In like the 60s, right? And it's like Japan is like struck by this awful earthquake and Japan is basically sinking. Japan literally sinks in the novel. Like the earthquakes are so bad and it's like this disaster horror novel. And Masaki Yuasa adapted this in a modern take. I'm not a big Masaki Yuasa fan, not my favorite director. I actually really don't like him. It's one of my hot anime takes. Love Japan Sinks. It's great. You should watch it. We're probably going to do a podcast about that soon. So check that out. Look at that.
Who the fuck is we? You and Solomon Hill?
You're all anime ballot.